From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 18th day of April, 2019. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. A bit later in the program, we'll be joined by Matt Bennett, Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds, agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. And as we close out our time together, we'll discuss the weather forecast to that with Mike Tenor at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Just a reminder that tomorrow is Good Friday and the CME Group in Chicago will be closed. However, we will have a closing market report tomorrow and, of course, Commodity Week. Our panelists this week will include Ellen Dearden of AgriView, Bill Mayer from Strategic Farm Marketing, Brian Stark of the Andersons, and Roy Huckabee of Lynn and Associates. We'll record that this afternoon, post it to our website this evening, and, of course, you can hear it right here tomorrow on many of these radio stations. It is Illinois Public Media, Public Radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. We're now joined by Dan Zwicker. He's at Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. Hey, good afternoon to you, Dan. Thanks for being with us.
More than welcome, Todd.
Hey, so let's talk a little bit about what's been happening across the Midwest in the Corn Belt. And I think the short answer is not much at this point. What do we know about years like this one?
Well, the only thing we know about years like this is the trade really doesn't get too worried about planting delays or significant production cutbacks because of a late planting. It's April 18th. Now, if it was May 18th, it would probably be a little different story. Historically, at least when you go back and look at years, whether they're dry years or whether they're wet years, it seems around the 20th of May, the trade kind of takes a look at how the crop went in, how much of it is in, what kind of condition it is, and kind of size it up whether or not the crop's off to a good start or the crop is off to a rough start. And that is usually when rallies start taking hold, whether if it's a dry year and we're not getting the rain that we think we should have, the market kind of takes off and rallies into that June, July timeframe. During wet years, it kind of does the same thing. It kind of decides around May 20th that based upon what they see in this in an excessive moisture situation, then the market takes off to compensate for probably reduced acres and maybe reduced yields because of a late planting. I mean, you could go back and look at 1993, and I'm not sure we're at 93 levels yet, but 1993, that was the year that it just wouldn't stop raining in the Western Corn Belt. I mean, Iowa just got rain after rain after rain. And 93 is one of those years where rain didn't make grain. But the market took off in that May timeframe, late May timeframe, and rallied into that late July, kind of the exhaustion. I always talk about back then we only had like one cable news channel. It was CNN, and I think there was some Illinois farmhouse started floating down the Mississippi River in that last week of July, and that was probably the top of the market until the market it slid into a fall low. And then with the short supply, the market then was able to regroup and rally higher as you go on into that January final for an old crop high. And then the new crop market went higher all the way on into June. Until it was pretty well assured that we were going to have a good crop in 1994. So it's just a shade early to worry about any kind of significant production cutback. I know it's nerving for a lot of farmers, but in today's age, you know, when we do have GPS, once it does dry out, there can be a lot of planning happen. In a short period of time, we could go 24/7. But I'll say, if you talk to me May 18th and nothing's been happening in the Corn Belt, then we got a bull market.
And then we'll giddy up at that point. How about that?
We might be able to giddy up a little sooner. My cyclical work indicates that the market's not going to worry about too much until at least the first week of May. So I kind of think the market maybe has another week here or so of chopping around, messing around. Now, we are deeply oversold, and that was the reason why the markets were able to kind of hold together, even bounce a little bit off their lows going into a three-day weekend. Soybeans put in nice little daily reversals to the upside after posting new lows for the year. Corn, not so much. May corn was kind of an inside unchanged day or slightly higher day, and that's the same. I think December corn did maybe make a lower low by a tick or so and then kind of closed unchanged. But basically, you know, corn held above the crop report low, which is important. So we kind of maybe have a double bottom forming in corn. Beans, not a double bottom, but a terribly oversold bottom. And we'll kind of see what the weather forecast, once we come out of this three-day weekend, whether or not we're going to be able to get back in the fields, at least on a limited basis, or which direction, whether it's going to be the eastern Corn Belt, western Corn Belt. Usually there's a portion of the Corn Belt is usually in trouble, and that's what usually triggers kind of the spring rally.
Well, that first week of May should be fairly interesting because there will be a convergence there, Dan, of a couple of things, along with the cycles you discussed. The Chinese delegation should be in the United States after Mr. Lighthizer and company have spent a week in China the previous week. And the first USDA WASDE report for the 2019-2020 season will come out. I think all of those things could come together, and I guess that could show something good for producers and provide an opportunity, maybe.
Let's hope so. Producers do need an opportunity here to get something to lay off some of the risk. And like I said, my cyclical work still indicates that we still should have a decent shot at some kind of June rally. It may not be the magnitude that we want, but it may be at the magnitude that might be good enough at least to peel off some inventory and kind of get your risk management program kind of where you want to be until we get into the critical months of July and August.
Do the soybeans lag or lead that cyclical time frame?
That's an interesting question. It wouldn't surprise me if soybeans leads, even though they have the worst looking balance sheet. And of course, any kind of planting delays and any kind of financial problems among farmers, you would have a tendency to think that acres might get some beans planted to it because there's not a lot of cost to plant an acre of beans, and you just go for it. And if you get the rains, you end up with 30, 40 bushels. That's better than nothing. Whereas corn is very expensive to put in an acre of corn if you want to shoot for the high-end yield. So, you know, it does favor that we might see more bean acres. But if we do cut some kind of deal with China and they become active buyers, there's probably enough shorts in the bean market to probably give us a decent rally.
Anything else you've been watching in the outside markets or other places that gives you hope or not?
Well, the economy still remains strong, at least when you see the numbers economically. The stock market continues to kind of want to firm. However, I'm in the camp that I think the stock market is vulnerable to some kind of decline in here. I don't necessarily think it's going to break the bull market, but there may be some money from outside of agriculture that might decide to come in into the ag markets and give it some life. I know the funds are carrying tremendously big short positions, and all we need is some kind of spark in here of lower production prospects or increased demand prospects, And that could give us a pretty good boost. And I'm hoping that kind of materializes sometime here in the last half of May, going into the June timeframe.
Hey, we'll talk with you again next week.
Very well.
That, of course, is Dan Zwicker. He's with Zwicker Consulting out of Waco, Texas. In today's agricultural news, we'll start with trade. As usual, the European Commission released a list of U.S. exports worth more than $22 billion that it wants to slap with retaliatory tariffs. It's the latest move in a lengthy WTO battle between the EU and the U.S. concerning subsidies provided to plane manufacturers Airbus and Boeing. European Trade Commissioner Cecilia Malmström says she hopes to resolve the years-long dispute through a settlement. Well, the Wall Street Journal reported yesterday that U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer is planning to visit Beijing the week of April the 29th for the next round of trade talks, followed by a Chinese delegation to Washington the next week. A senior administration official said the dates are likely correct, but not final. The official said it would be difficult, but not impossible, to have a final deal ready for the signing by Memorial Day. Well, Chinese pork prices could rise some 70% this year and reach record high levels in the second half of 2019. That's reported by the South China Morning Post and a Chinese agricultural official. Financial firm Rabobank this week projected that 200 million Chinese pigs could be culled as African swine fever spreads in that country. And yesterday, in a FarmDoc daily webinar that you can find on our website right now, former president of the University of Illinois and animal scientist Bob Easter noted that the sow herd in China had been decimated by the disease African swine fever.
It's clear that you can eliminate the animals, let the facilities set, and repopulate. That's been done. As I think I mentioned early on, it was done in the Dominican Republic and on the island of Hispaniola. The challenge is putting the policies in place, the security in place to allow you to do that. And how long does it take to get that done? I had an email from a veterinary friend of mine in China a couple mm-hmm. of days ago. He's actually one of our former students mm-hmm. who's worked there 25 years, I guess. And he said it seems to be slowing down simply because there aren't any more sows to infect.
That was animal scientist and former president of the University of Illinois, Bob Easter, speaking on a FarmDoc daily webinar yesterday. You can watch that webinar right now if you'd like on our website at willag.org. One other trade note for the day, the U.S. Grains Council strongly supports a decision announced today by the WTO's dispute settlement body determining China administered its tariff rate quotas for wheat, corn, and rice inconsistently with its WTO requirements. The report found that China's TRQ administration is not transparent, predictable, or fair, and that it ultimately inhibits TRQs from filing, which is one factor denying U.S. farmers access to China's market for corn and other grains. The decision stems from consultations first requested by the U.S. government in 2016 based on findings and analysis done for the Council, U.S. Wheat Associates, and the USA Rice Federation. And finally today, the 42nd annual commemorative egg designed for First Lady Melania Trump was unveiled yesterday. It will be presented to Mrs. Trump on Monday at the annual White House Easter Egg Roll by the American Egg Board. The design for this year's egg was inspired by submissions from children of America's egg farmers. The Egg Board will provide a record-breaking 74,000 eggs for Monday's event, which will be used for the egg roll, egg decorating, and egg pops. The 141st annual event will be held on the White House South Lawn, with more than 30,000 families expected to attend. And that's a look at today's agricultural news. Well, as we noted at the beginning of our agricultural newscast, the United States is in trade negotiations with the European Union, and it's saying that it simply will not exclude ag from that trade deal. Although the European Union isn't so hot on the idea, the EU says its mandate for a trade deal with the United States is no agriculture. The American Farm Bureau says no way, AFBF trade advisor Dave Samuelson.
Well, we've long wanted the EU to make changes, and we still do. So if we ever come back to a talks, we'll want them to make those changes again. That hasn't moved for us.
But the EU refuses to change its food standards or accept more competition from the United States, says Samuelson.
Their restrictions on our meat sales, their use of geographic indicators, which can restrict our sales of dairy products and meat products into the EU.
And there are other outstanding issues.
We've started this off with the EU with the tariffs on steel and aluminum. The EU has retaliated on many U.S. products, putting 25% tariffs on many things, including several ag products.
Earlier trade talks with the European Union reached a stalemate over agriculture. U.S. Senate Finance Chair Chuck Grassley says any deal that excludes agriculture would be unlikely to pass Congress. Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net is now on the line to take a look at what's been happening down on the farm. He is in Windsor, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Matt. Thanks so much. I bet you were wishing you were busy in the field this afternoon.
Yeah. We were actually getting, you know, pretty close. And then overnight and then into this morning, we had quite a bit of rain, as most of Central Illinois did. So kind of frustrating, but it is what it is, and not a whole lot we can do about it right now.
So one of the things I've noted on Twitter is that there have been a few pictures posted of lines waiting with anhydrous ammonia tanks to get those filled, and it's been taking some time to do that. However, not a lot of anhydrous rigs are moving, and that brings me to what happened last fall. Not much. So we're getting to that point where there's just not a lot of time left, and you have to delay between the time you put the nitrogen on and the time that you plant, somewhere between, 7 and 10 days. So we're starting to kind of get critical as it relates to subsoil and topsoil moistures and being able to get everything done in time, aren't we?
Yeah, I think so. You know, a lot of the guys in Iowa and Missouri that were able to run a little bit this week were extremely frustrated because they just couldn't get their hands on the ammonia. So 3 days ago, one of my friends had to quit at 5 o'clock, and then 2 days ago, he had to quit at noon, and then yesterday, he had to quit at 9 a.m., and then it got rain overnight. So they didn't get all their gas on, very frustrated with that. A lot of guys can run after just a few days. I mean, they really want you to wait at least 5 days, but I've seen people go out and plant not long after they put the anhydrous on. If they catch a rain, typically they're going to be okay, but if they don't, boy, they can really suffer from some burn there. So we're getting fairly critical. Guys are trying to figure out what kind of nitrogen they're going to use. A lot of different things you can do, but I think every source of nitrogen is going to have a little bit of a weight.
Yeah, so that brings me to the next question, because there will be a lot of people thinking, hey, we'll switch acres, but producers will be pushing really hard to get anhydrous ammonia on, and I think that's the one that makes the big difference, because if it gets put on, if the nitrogen goes, then they're going into corn.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the thing is, we got to remember, if we're sitting here talking about this in 3 weeks, which, you know, hopefully we're not, but if we are, you know, there'll be some parts of the Corn Belt where guys might really start thinking pretty hard about hoping for another rain or two so they can do prevent plant. And the reason is that if they didn't get the anhydrous on, if they didn't get their chemicals on, then the payout for prevent plant may actually be good enough for them to hold things together for the year, considering they didn't have a whole lot invested in the crop compared to years where they already had the anhydrous on and maybe already had a chemical applied. So you got to keep those things in mind as well. There's definitely a lot of complex factors moving forward.
And those prevent plant dates move from north to south. They're not very far away, actually, if you're in the Delta region, and they've been really quite wet for a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. Parts of the Corn Belt that should be done right now are not. Whenever you get down into the Delta and, you know, in some parts of the Southeast, they've gotten some done, but they've also been quite wet in areas. So it's been a challenging spring thus far. And, you know, a lot of areas are going to be getting green. You're going to have to work your ground a couple of times to get it fit. I know a lot of us like to spray residual in the fall, but unfortunately last fall there just wasn't a whole lot of time. And so those that didn't get the residual sprayed start to have some pretty fields.
Yeah. Hey, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Matt Bennett is with AgMarket.net. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mike Tenura, T-Storm Weather in Chicago. Hey, Mike, thanks for being with us. How wet really is it in Illinois, Iowa, the Dakotas, and Minnesota?
Well, most of these areas have been much wetter than normal for a long period of time. And that's really where most of the wetness issues come from. It's not just that it rained over the last couple of days or the last couple of weeks. This weather pattern goes back very far into the past, dating all the way to the beginning of last summer. And because of that, it doesn't take a whole lot of rain or snow to turn things wet. And we have been in that wet pattern here for the last few weeks, and that's why things are staying wet. It's not so much just the rain in itself, it's that it's being compounded by what happened earlier.
What do we know about the next week or so?
Well, we do have quite a bit more rain to go through over the next 2 days across Indiana, Ohio, and parts of the Delta and Illinois. And that's primarily because as you look outside your window today, you can see it's raining. And as we go through tomorrow, the rain isn't going to shift all that far to the east. It's going to regenerate in some fashion, especially across Indiana and Ohio. That's where another 1 to 2 inches are coming up through tomorrow. So that's kind of the main issue in the very near term. Once we get into next week, it does get a little more complex. There's a very large system that's going to move through the central U.S. once again. The difference between that system and the ones we've seen lately is that this one will be much more disorganized than the recent ones, and it will also be a slow mover. So it's hard to pinpoint exactly how this is all going to pan out, but we think that most of the Corn Belt and most of the central and southern plains will receive a half of an inch to 1.5 inches of rain next week. This will start on Monday and Tuesday in Nebraska and Kansas, and then slowly move to the east as next week progresses. So basically, there's more rain on the way next week. We're just trying to figure out those details now.
I know it gets very, very tough to get further out than 10 days, but do you see anything different for the last week of April and the first week of May?
Well, it's a difficult question to answer, but I believe that we're still going to see these rain chances in the vicinity of the Corn Belt. The main reason is that if you look at the position of the jet stream as it lies today, and then where it's likely to lie a couple of weeks from now, there's not a whole lot of change in that position. So because of that, more than likely we'll see rain in different areas at different times. Now, that being said, I don't see a major washout at this point in time, though that certainly is a possibility. It's also possible that these rain chances might not materialize quite as much as expected, and some areas end up drier than normal. But typically, when you see this type of setup, you end up somewhere in between the extremes. You don't end up real wet. You don't end up real dry. You end up in that middle ground where you're kind of in a normal range of rainfall. And this, again, would be at the end of April and the beginning of May. But as we already talked about, you don't need a lot of rain to keep conditions wet. So is a fully 100% dry period coming up? Probably not. Is a super wet period coming up? Probably not. But is rain coming up? Yes, there probably is some rain coming up.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Mike Tenura with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.